When going into business with a business partner, do you recommend an LLC or a general partnership?
Can you suggest any strategies for putting the screws to people in a very gentle way?
I'm Lisa Rothman, and you're listening to Chew On This, Fresh Ideas Made to Order. Today, how to go into business for yourself without going broke or losing your mind. We're at the Soma Street Food Park in San Francisco. 10 food trucks serving up lunch and dinner 7 days a week. This show is all about community, how to make the best use of it to find answers to everyday problems. So where better to do our show than at a food truck park? That looks amazing. What is it?
Oh, I'm eating the tofu. It's really fresh. There's a really nice peanut sauce with the meat. Just a really nice blend of flavors.
I'm getting one of those.
Coming up, how to be a successful freelancer. Welcome to Chew On This. I'm Lisa Rothman. We take a challenge people face in their daily lives and ask experts how to handle it. We're at this food truck park because it's a vibrant public space where conversations happen and because we can't chew on ideas alone. We'll sample the food truck offerings later on. Today, how to be a successful freelancer or small business owner. Adele Berry is a business trainer with Women's Initiative for Self-Employment. They help low-income women launch their own businesses and become economically self-sufficient. Adele, I'm glad you're here.
Thank you, Lisa.
Holly Minch is the founder of Lightbox Collaborative, a network of freelance consultants that help social entrepreneurs. Thanks for being here today.
Excited to be here. Thank you.
So, Adele, you help women get started in business. The women who attend your classes, what are some of the businesses that they're thinking about starting?
I've had everything from a fashion designer from London to a woman who had a specialty cookie recipe that she developed, a potato chip cookie, to a woman right now who wants to offer in-home care to senior citizens.
And what are some of the concerns that the women who take your classes have as they think about going into business for themselves?
Well, many entrepreneurs want to know, how am I going to fund this business? Also, who is the target market? Who are my actual customers? This is something that I've enjoyed doing as a hobby, but are people willing to pay me for it? So those are just some of the questions that people come to when they're starting a business.
Holly, you help social entrepreneurs. What is a social entrepreneur?
You're not the only one who's asking that question. It's actually being hotly debated in the pages of the Stanford Social Innovation Review and a lot of other places. But my simple definition is a social entrepreneur is somebody who sees a social problem and starts a venture in order to not only solve that social problem and make social change, but also make a living in the process.
Here's a question I've had for a long time. Because you help do-gooders do better, right?
That's my job.
Why is it that people who really want to do good and contribute to society have such a hard time making ends meet?
I actually think it's one of the reasons that people who are doing good in the world have trouble making ends meet is one of the same reasons that people who are freelancers have trouble making ends meet, and it's because they don't know how to value the work that they do. They don't know how to value the service they're offering the world. And so one of the big mistakes that I see freelancers make really often is they charge by the hour as if their time was actually the biggest commodity they're selling. Instead, I think freelancers and anybody who's trying to make a contribution to the world has to really figure out what is the value of my offering? What is it worth, this thing that I'm contributing, and figure out how to price it appropriately, not only so that the market will bear it, but that it will support me as well.
Do you dream about going into business for yourself? Freelancing on special projects, setting your own hours, being your own boss, turning a hobby into a business? What's stopping you? Are you worried that you'll wind up alone in your office, which is actually your kitchen table, with a phone that never rings, a website no one clicks on, and a bank balance of $2.50? If you're in business for yourself already, what would make it easier? More companionship? More clients? More invoices paid on time? By the end of the show, you'll have some ideas about how to handle the ups and downs of owning your own business. To get things started, I'm going to ask the experts for their advice with my own freelancing challenge.
I've been in the workforce for 20 years, and for more than half that time, I've been a freelancer. I know that I'm supposed to go to these networking events to drum up business, but I hate them. I absolutely hate them. I find myself in the corner with a glass of wine in one hand, shoveling cheese cubes into my mouth with the other hand, name tag askew, looking out at all these strangers and having absolutely no idea how to strike up a conversation with them that does not feel completely phony. Here's my question. How do you make small talk if you are not interested in the weather or sports?
I find it really helpful when I'm going to a big conference or a networking event to have a power question. And your power question might be, hey, what's your favorite project you're working on? Or tell me something that's got you really excited this week. What's your current obsession? What article have you read lately? But to have a power question that you feel really comfortable chit-chatting about, that you're also, you're comfortable reciprocating in kind, that you have a great answer to that power question as well.
I think also most people enjoy talking about themselves. So if you can ask them something about what they're doing, as Holly said, about a project or, you know, what they're working on or what they intend to, you know, get started on soon, that's always a good way to start a conversation.
I would also say that you shouldn't feel compelled to go to networking events if they're not actually generating business. If what you're trying to do is figure out where to find project leads, a networking event may or may not be the best place to do that. So getting really clear on where are my referrals coming from, where are my leads coming from, and spending your time in those places rather than going to the networking event that may or may not yield what you need.
I've never gotten a single lead from a networking event. I think I've eaten my last cheese cube. We have people here at the Soma Street Food Park in San Francisco who are either in business for themselves or are deciding whether to take the plunge. Adele Berry and Holly Minch are going to make sure that our interests and strengths match up with our business ideas. Adele?
Well, first, I just want to ask if any of you are business owners, or if any of you are thinking about owning a business, or if you have any interests that you're wondering if they're actually marketable as a business. So, okay, tell us about the business that you're interested in starting.
Chocolate making parties.
Okay. Great. And so what kind of experience do you have with chocolate making?
I make chocolates and I studied pastries.
Fantastic. That sounds like a good start. Have you had friends test any of your products and give you feedback?
Yeah, I did a survey. I had samples and I had people taste them and I had them fill out a survey on their experience.
Excellent. That's fantastic. Sounds like you're on your way to developing a product that people will enjoy.
I would love to add another question. What kind of experience do you have throwing parties?
I used to work for a cooking kitchen store, and they threw cooking parties, so I have that background.
As she launches her business, are there any other things that she should be thinking about in addition to her expertise and what her interests are? Any other, perhaps thinking about a niche or something like that?
I think a huge step is to work on a business plan. That's going to be really essential because you want to know about your competition. First of all, who are other people that also offer chocolate parties? And what are their strengths and weaknesses so that you can really capitalize on what you're really good at? And also when you do a business plan, it's just going to really help you to look at your industry and make sure you're charging enough. You know, maybe you're, let's say you're charging $2 for each piece of chocolate, and really it's something that's such a specialty that you ought to be charging twice as much. So all of those are going to be really important steps in getting your business launched.
And I would also say to be really clear about what you're offering, right? Are you really selling the delicious chocolate, or are you highlighting the fun experience? And being really clear about exactly what is your product and how you're going to sell that and dial up the best dimension of that clear product offering.
Thank you so much.
So what kind of business are you interested in starting?
The kind of business that it is part of my question because it's kind of broad. My wife and I have several ideas, and you know, being completely green, we like to fantasize that we can do all of it, which is probably not the case, but I mean, we're both creative. I'm a graphic designer, creative director, and my wife is an event producer, and you know, we like to make things, but we also like to find things, and so we're thinking maybe we could ease into a retail situation and also, you know, make things that we can sell online, but also make things that we can rent, because like I said, my wife did events, and there's a lot of weird little businesses here and there that had unique things to rent for a night, you know, or whatever, and So that was part of it, too.
So a friend of mine wrote this great book. Chris Gullibo is the author of a book called The $100 Startup. And one of the things he talks about is being really clear, not just on what you love to do, but what the world needs. And so really thinking about what's that Venn diagram between your interest in making things, finding cool vintage stuff, but also thinking about what's the market niche, what does the world need, and how to make sure that your passion also can remain profitable.
And I just want to say, too, that it's really important to, as an entrepreneur, you're going to spend a lot of time. So it's important, I'd say, if you have a lot of ideas, to pick the one that you're most passionate about. Like, literally, if you're going to work a 70-hour a week, but it's going to be something that you're going to look forward to doing every day. I think that's a really good way to narrow down which of those ideas you actually want to run with.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You're listening to Chew On This. We're talking today about how to be a successful freelancer or small business owner. We'll be back after this. We'd like to do a second season of Chew On This, and we could use your help. If you go to our website, chewonthisradio.com, you'll see a link to a brief survey. Fill it out, and you'll show potential funders that Chew On This gives you the information you need to make the world a better place, starting right where you live. That's chewonthisradio.com. Thank you. You're listening to Chew On This. I'm Lisa Rothman. We're at the Soma Street Food Park in San Francisco because we want to harness the power of community to find practical ways to solve problems. Today, we're finding out how you can go into business for yourself, even if you don't have a lot of money. Our experts are Holly Minch, the founder of Lightbox Collaborative. They help make good ideas a reality. And Adele Berry. She's with the Women's Initiative for Self-Employment. Let's get some more questions answered.
Hi there. Thank you guys for being here. My name's Alexandra. I'm a huge fan of Chris Gullibo. I read his book. This current book focuses on people who have made over $50,000 in a year. So, and I've heard that it takes about 2 years to really launch your business. What have you seen in your experience?
So I can tell you my story. I was one of the folks profiled in the $100 Startup, and there's an article called The $100 Consultant, and I will tell you that I didn't even have the $100 when I started my consulting practice. I had a ratty old laptop from like 5 years ago and, you know, gumption, basically. And I actually found that in the first year, I was operating in the black, largely because my only expense was my time, right? What I was willing to put in was the only overhead I had to cover. So, you know, 5 years in, I still don't have an office. I'm still working on a pretty lean model. So I think the question of how quickly can you become profitable is it's directly proportional to how lean can you operate.
I also think it depends on the type of business that you've had. I've run both a business where I offered a service as well as a product. And I think the benefit of a service business is that it's really, really easy to keep your overhead low. And in doing that, I was profitable almost immediately because really all I needed was a laptop. I went to my client's location and I was consulting on advertising. Whereas with a product business, you have to do more of the back end of actually developing the product. And that can take a lot of time and energy. So the leeway might be a little bit longer for a product business. But with a service business, really, if you keep that overhead low, there's no reason why you should not be able to be profitable earlier. And it's also a matter, too, though, of building those contacts that will actually be your clients. I was fortunate that I was in the corporate world and I was laid off, but I had a fair amount of network. I had a good network in place already. So when I actually launched my service business, I already had some people to kind of contact to give me work.
Thanks so much. That was really helpful.
Hello. My name is Raina. I have a full-time job. I'm not going to quit it. But I also fancy the idea of having my own business or something small, like turning, you know, the crafts into sales. So what advice do you have? How do I keep my day job and do my fun stuff and sell it?
I would say you're actually in a really enviable position, right? Because it's not, you're not really leaning on that second freelance job to support you. It's really a passion, and it's a way to make a little profit from your passion. So there's a number of really great books on the market, for example, about how to make money on Etsy. If it's crafts you want to sell online, there's a number of great manuals about how to do that that are available. You can sort of learn how to run your business on Etsy. There's also, I think, an opportunity to find, what are the local crafts fairs in your neighborhood? What's the flea market that allows you to go do those kinds of things? Find the outlet, find where you're going to market the product, and then work backwards from there, because you'll get a sense of how frequently do I need to take time off from my job to go be at that vintage craft fair, or how frequently do I need to schedule a shipping day to get all those Etsy sales out the door, and really work backwards from that the marketing opportunities to think about how much time and how much inventory, how much product you need to create in order to meet them.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Yuan. I returned back to America. I also grew up here earlier. And in 93, I was back in San Francisco, and I'd work all abroad and here. And I got so much of my work through word of mouth. And I do high-end frescoes, murals, color consulting, design ideas. But I had an unfortunate predicament, a hit-and-run accident in Golden Gate Park. So I lost a lot of contact, business. You know, can go to opening nights of the symphony, which was a way of saying, oh, there, he's still around. I disappeared. So my question is leading on, because now we have the internet world, is there a way I can find an agent? That's my, I'm thinking, the best source.
Yeah, I don't have a ton of experience in helping people find agents, but I do think one of the best things you can do is make those contacts. If you're known for a particular niche in your field, if you're known for your eye, then really making sure you let folks in your network know, hey, I'm available to consult on these kinds of things, and rebuilding that network and rebuilding those business contacts of folks who are willing to say, that guy's really good at what he does, that guy's really smart, hey, he really has an eye for this, that's a way that can lead to bigger and bigger projects and bigger network as word spreads.
Well, like LinkedIn or
LinkedIn can be a great resource, yeah. Particularly for networking with people who are similar to similar type of work to you, and to finding out perhaps if they're represented or if they have some agents that they could refer you to, mm-hmm. which would be ideal.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
I also find the best way to build your network of contacts is to simply ask, right? If you have two or three folks that are in your industry that you work with frequently, sit down with them and ask them, hey, I really enjoy the work we do together. Who else should I be talking to? And you'll be amazed at how willing people are to open their networks and make introductions on your behalf.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're listening to Chew On This. Today, we're at the Soma Street Food Park in San Francisco. We're finding out how to be our own bosses. Our experts are Holly Minch with Lightbox Collaborative and Adele Berry, a business trainer with Women's Initiative. Women's Initiative has helped low-income women launch more than 5,000 businesses. It also helped fund a commercial kitchen called La Cocina. It's for low-income food entrepreneurs. And one of La Cocina's success stories sells tamales right here at the Soma Street Food Park. Her name is Alicia Villanueva, and her business is called Alicia's Tamales Los Mayas. Let's visit her at La Cocina to learn what it takes to be president, CEO, and head chef of her own company.
I have six ladies, and our big day of production is Mondays. We prepare between 2,000 tamales to almost 3,000 per week.
Si es para pollo, le ponemos todas las hierbas frescas.
You know, I have so money, but not enough to do whatever I want now, but I'm growing. I am following my dream since 10 years ago when I arrived to United States. Then I start to sell my tamales in front of the church, Santa Isabel in Oakland, but with no permits. But I just start my business like that way, and then knocking doors, I just introduce myself, knocking doors and say, hey, my name is Alicia and I'm cooking these delicious tamales. Would you like to try them and buy them? And right now I'm working in my second business plan because I want to get my own restaurant. It's kind of stressing. You have all feelings, you know. Sometimes I cry, sometimes I'm really happy because in certain points you get kind of nervous. But right now, I'm the happiest lady in the world because I'm just living my American dream.
You're listening to Chew On This. If you're just joining us, we're at the Soma Street Food Park in San Francisco. A number of people here in our audience are enjoying Alicia's tamales as they find out how to be successful freelancers. Our experts are Adele Berry, a business trainer with Women's Initiative for Self-Employment, and she's also a freelance creative director, and Holly Minch with Lightbox Collaborative. Let's get another question from our audience.
Hi, my name is Judith, and now I'm unemployed, and one would think that's a perfect opportunity to start my business, but the situation is my unemployment doesn't even cover my mortgage. So I'm worried about that, and I have to go back into a full-time position. I'm at the age range where top ramen and living with five roommates is not happening. And if, let's say, I want to do blog writing, profitability isn't there for 3 to 5 years. How do I really fund this?
There's some websites such as guru.com, which is actually international, where you can post your skills and people all over the world, and then you can actually, people will post projects from all over the world and you can actually bid on them. And they will let you know what are their particular preferences in terms of, are they looking for somebody who can get it done really fast or somebody who has this particular skill set? And that can be a really nice way to, one, start to earn some income, but also to build a client base. Because as you complete projects on sites like Guru, and there are many others like that out there, people actually rate you. Like they say, she was very efficient, she was easy to work with, she understood my objectives and performed very well. So then not only do you start to earn money and to build a client base, but you also start to build a rating system that shows that you're very good at what you do, which makes you more attractive to future clients that might be coming on board.
I would also say, if you're in a situation where you find yourself in this catch-22 where I want to start my own business, but I need the money I'm making at my job, to really look hard at your lifestyle. I mean, one of the great things about working for yourself and going freelance is that it gives you the opportunity to truly reinvent your life. And I would look around and I would say, what is it that I can live without this week, this month, this year in order to reach this higher goal? So the year that I went freelance, we didn't take a big vacation, but that meant that 3 years later, I was able to take a month off and travel. And so think about, what is it that I can eliminate in the short term to make a greater gain in the long term?
When we come back, we'll talk more about the ins and outs of freelancing, and you'll get to hear about some food truck vendors here at the park who turn their own business idea into a reality. Trucks rely on word of mouth, and so does Chew On This. The next time you're enjoying a meal with friends or coworkers, let them know the good ideas you heard here and send them to our website, chewonthisradio.com. That's chewonthisradio.com. Thank you.
What is the chicken, crispy chicken sandwich?
With a side of coleslaw and a side of beans.
Comfort Japanese food. This is a
arugula and berries.
Lamb and beef gyro. Was it, what, are they called gyros or euro?
It looks like a pita.
A pork slider and a brisket slider from the barbecue truck. And then we all got to share the sticky rice, and it's fabulous.
It was good. It was really good. Very satisfying.
People are enjoying lots of different foods here at the Soma Street Food Park in San Francisco. I'm Lisa Rothman, and you're listening to Chew On This, Fresh Ideas Made to Order. We take a challenge people face in their daily lives and ask experts how to handle it. Today, how to avoid the common pitfalls of going into business for yourself. We're at this food truck park because Chew On This celebrates community. And what community celebration would be complete without food? Adele Berry is with Women's Initiative for Self-Employment. Holly Minch is with Lightbox Collaborative. Let's have our experts answer more of the audience's questions.
My name's Ken. My question is simply, what are the options for healthcare if you're not in the indentured servitude of a corporation or aren't married to someone who's in the indentured servitude of a corporation?
That's a great question. Depending on the county that you live in, I know in the East Bay, for example, if you are below a certain income, the county offers healthcare services through HealthPAC. And I think a lot of, well, I shouldn't generalize, but I think quite a few counties in the Bay Area do offer free healthcare if you are below a certain threshold. Where it gets a little harder is if you're kind of in the mid-range. There are, exactly. But you can also go onto county websites, and I know that there are some links to low-cost healthcare, and they will actually price it out for you based on various tiers, whether you want an HMO or a PPO.
And I might be an eternal optimist here, but I'm of the belief that as healthcare reform kicks in at the federal level, it's actually going to open up a whole new world for freelancers and self-employed folks. Right now, there's a whole infrastructure being built to sort of take advantage of that moment. The Freelancers Union, which is a national organization, they're based in New York. Great resources for anybody who's looking to go freelance in a service industry. They've actually started the Freelancers Insurance Group as a way to take advantage of some of those reforms at the federal level and start up state-based health insurance co-ops for freelancers and self-employed folks.
Thank you both. Hi, my name is Mark. I'm a former freelancer. The hardest time that I had when I was a freelancer was finding out what my competitors were charging, because they don't want to tell you, and of course the clients won't tell you. So what's the best way to find out?
And there are a couple ways to go about it. I've actually just asked the clients. You know, I've said, I'm sure that you have already a set scale of what you're willing to pay, so why don't you just let me know, and we'll see if we can work with that. And other ways, just kind of hunting around on the internet, particularly job search sites that will actually post what they're offering for particular positions.
So a couple other ideas might include having informal conversations with other consultants, right? You need your competitors because they're also your peers. At Lightbox Collaborative, we talk about other folks who are serving the same niche as our co-opetition, right? Because one day we might be competing, but the next day we might actually be cooperating and serving as allies or, sort of comrade in arms because we face really similar challenges as freelancers. And so we actually have pretty good relationships and pretty open conversations with some of our co-opetition. The other thing you might do is take a look at the RFPs, the requests for proposals that your potential clients are issuing. They'll often be really upfront about what they have to offer in terms of the project fee. And you might also considering, if you're just starting out as a freelancer, think about subcontracting for other firms or agencies in the space where you work. So for example, I do a lot of PR and marketing work, and when I was first starting out as a freelancer, I actually partnered up with other firms who needed an extra set of hands on some projects and got to learn, oh, this is how this business is doing it, and that was really helpful as I was informing my own business.
There's a lot of healthy co-opetition or cooperative competition happening right here among the 10 food trucks at the Soma Street Food Park. The vendors talk about how supportive their colleagues are, sharing tips about good places to set up shop. And right about this time in the show, I start getting distracted by the smells from the food trucks. Let's meet the owners of Fuki Food Truck, Alex Mizells and Seabrook Gubbins, two best friends who decided to turn a hobby into a business.
We came up with the idea when we were on a bike ride, when we thought, what can we do that we can enjoy and not be too stressed out about and still make some money? And somehow we came around to this food truck thing because it was kicking off everywhere, and we started doing it, and one thing led to another, and then we had a truck.
Yeah, we liked the concept of it, the fact that it was mobile, the fact that you could work when you want to work, that it was kind of a bit of a party, it's kind of a scene. All these aspects of it. Everyone knows each other within the scene, and we all trade food, so you get to try everybody else's food, and everyone's usually really into it.
You know, and we thought, hey, we can do this, and we can have fun, people can get good food, we can hopefully make some money, and everybody will be happy. We built this whole thing, and, you know, to start a business is very gratifying, to start it and see it actually do something.
The learning process is laborious, to say the least.
It's just a lot of like rubber stamps and like hoops you have to jump through. It's just like one thing after another, you know? And that's, yeah, trying. I think if I would have done it on my own without Alex, it would have been like, yeah, there probably would have been a point where I'd have been like, screw this, you know? But once you get there, once it's happening, it's like, oh, that wasn't a big deal, whatever, we're there now. It's really, I mean, there's been a lot of bumps and stuff. Like, first of all, I mean, we both have a lot of food experience, but it's one thing to, like, cook in a restaurant small things and this and that. It's another thing to, like, cook large batches of stuff. So the first initial thing, we definitely kind of bit off more than we could chew. We're like, okay, we'll do this event, boom, boom. We ended up being up and just stressing and then, like, working at the commissary, like, all night, until like 4 or 5 in the morning and finding out that we really screwed up a lot of stuff and we actually had to call cancel the event. Not really because we did, we did do some things wrong, but it was just, it was errors that were bound to be made. We didn't know. We just didn't know that you can't cook like this much and multiply out like that. They were just simple errors, you know, but they were huge errors at that time. That was one moment that wasn't so pretty, I guess.
Thank God we had a bottle of wine in the car. Thank God. Like anything, you just, when you find those roadblocks, it's just finding a way around them. And it's just staying positive that you will figure it out. And that's tough.
The food was just a creative process. And we wanted to have really unique things. And then we would like try them with everybody, like all of our friends would be there. And then like other people who cook would be like, yeah, but you could add a little bit of this and a little bit of that would be nice with this. And eventually we came to the things. Everybody's like, yes, that's perfect. And Pookie was born.
I'm Lisa Rothman. You're listening to Chew On This. Today, we're talking about the joys and perils of striking out on your own. We just heard about Fuki Food Truck's adventures with that. Later on, several audience members will have a chance to win some food from Fuki. It's one of 10 food trucks that come here daily on a rotating basis. All of the food truck owners have experienced their share of rough patches. Our freelancing experts are Holly Minch, founder of Lightbox Collaborative, which helps social entrepreneurs promote their good ideas, and Adele Berry. She's a business trainer with Women's Initiative, which found that for every dollar invested in its clients, $30 goes back into the local economy. That's quite a return on investment. Let's get some more questions answered.
Hi, my name is Jennifer, and my question is, how do you stay focused when you're working from home? You don't have colleagues and things like that to keep you on your job, so you have any strategies or techniques?
And before you answer that question, we should point out that you're holding an infant in your arms. How old is your child?
5 months.
5 months old.
When you launch a business, it can be very isolating, so I think it's really important to start immediately to develop a network of other people who are also launching businesses. All over the country, meetups are a fantastic way to meet people either in similar industries or whether you want to do a group just for women or if you want to do a group for people within a certain geography. But I think it's really important to start to develop a network of colleagues who also are in a similar situation. So whether it's just meeting at a local coffee shop and, you know, kind of bouncing ideas off of each other, or you know, whether it's creating your own Facebook group so at least you can interact with them as well as having the face-to-face meetings. I think it's really important, though, that you do reach out and connect with other people as you're launching your new business.
And finding the creative space to focus can really be a challenge. I know some working moms who I work with, they actually get together and bring their kids all to one person's house and have a babysitter come in, even though the moms are all there, just so they can all focus and work together for the day. I also know a lot of folks really lean heavily on co-working spaces where you can either join as a member, or there's a great app for your iPhone called Liquid Space. And you can go on to Liquid Space and find what's around you, where you can find an office or a cubicle just for a couple hours to get some focus.
Oh, thanks very much. It was great.
I'm Kevin. So in my experience, it seems like it's hard to do everything on your own. So my question is, when going into business with a business partner, do you recommend an LLC or a general partnership? Or what are the advantages and disadvantages?
The type of incorporation that you do, whether it's an S-Corp or a C-Corp or an LLC, there are certain tax benefits, being that LLC and S-Corps are both pass-through entities, meaning you aren't doubly taxed. But it really depends on the type of business. And I would really recommend that you speak to two people, an accountant as well as to an attorney.
So how early on do you get an accountant kind of involved in your starting?
I would get it. I think it's never too early to get an accountant. You want to make sure that your books are set up right from the get-go, going out the door. So I definitely would say get an accountant as soon as possible. And in most cities across the United States, there are, you could check with the public library or check online, but there, most cities offer free lawyer services. It's usually like maybe one day a month, you know, and it's on a first-come, first-served basis. And that's a way to get some free legal advice on that particular issue.
Great. Thank you.
And you're touching on one of the biggest questions that I was thinking a lot about when I went out on my own. I knew I wanted to work for myself, but not by myself. And so we actually started a collaborative model whereby it's a sole proprietorship for all intents and purposes. One person owns the business, but we actually partner up on different projects and each consultant takes a portion of the project fee. And so we didn't have to get into the legal complexities of partnerships, but we were still able to find creative ways to work together and collaborate and, you know, have a team that where each person brought their own skills, their experiences, and their best ideas.
That's a good idea. Thank you.
And I was going to add, too, another thing that's really a great idea is when you're first starting out is to do some work for trade. Like, so say, for example, you're a web designer and you know somebody else who's a graphic designer. So you could you can do trade. Like, essentially, you draw up an invoice and say that maybe they're going to give you, you know, design your corporate identity. The graphic designer will design your corporate identity for a fee that would be equivalent of $500. And then you will do outline the interface, their web user interface, you know, for an equivalent amount of money.
Honest, you don't have to do money yet.
Exactly, because one of the challenges is that when you're starting out, you don't have a lot of money. So trade is a great way to really get things up and going without having to have a lot of capital up front.
Great, thank you.
And in a number of cities across the country, there are actually facilitated trade exchanges for small businesses to do exactly that, to work with each other on a barter basis. Here in the Bay Area, it's called Bay Bucks. And in Philadelphia, it's called Equal Dollars. There's similar exchanges in Vermont and elsewhere all over the country. Portland, Oregon has one as well. So find out the Small Business Trade Exchange in your area as well.
Thanks. Great information. Appreciate it.
I'm Lisa Rothman, and you're listening to Chew On This. We'll have all those trade exchanges up on our website at chewonthisradio.com. When we come back, we'll get some more questions answered and tackle the Meal of Fortune Challenge.
The best things in life are free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I need fun.
That's what I want.
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 The first season of Chew On This has 5 episodes. Would you like seconds? You can help make that happen. Simply go to our website, chewonthisradio.com, click the link to the survey, and in less time than it takes to order from a food truck, you show potential funders that Chew On This is connecting with you and making a positive impact. That's chewonthisradio.com. Order up! If you're just joining us, you're listening to Chew On This. We're finding out how to be successfully self-employed. We're at the Soma Street Food Park in San Francisco because food trucks like this one give us the chance to hear from a broad range of community voices, voices like yours. If you weren't able to attend the show, but you'd like to ask a question or share information, visit our website at chewonthisradio.com. Our freelancing experts are Adele Berry with Women's Initiative and Holly Minch with Lightbox Collaborative. Let's get another question from our audience.
Hi, my name's Maggie. I'm a freelance writer and editor, and I do not have the life partner who's bringing home the bacon, so I have many cash flow questions, but most specifically right now, I've sent out some invoices, and not everyone is paying up as promptly as I would like them to, and that is impacting my cash flow, so I'm wondering, can you suggest any strategies for putting the screws to people in a very gentle way?
I always like to put a little clause at the bottom of my invoice that says, 30 days past due, I charge this amount of interest, 60 days past due. And what I found is that I'll just call the client, maybe when it's coming up, and I'll say, interest will be due coming up, but if you can just cut a check for me today, of course I'll waive that fee. And if they don't, I actually will invoice them with the interest attached to it. And usually I only have to do that to a client once, and it doesn't happen again.
All right, and provided that I have not yet put that clause on there, do you have any other strategies for, getting people to pay up?
Just a friendly phone call, really, and it's really about the dialogue because I really am not as much interested in getting the interest as much as maintaining the relationship with my clients. So usually just a phone call, to their accounting department or an email, just letting them know, hey, it's coming up on 30 days past due. I just wanted to check and see when accounting would actually be cutting that check.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Adele Berry with Women's Initiative and Holly Minch with Lightbox Collaborative for sharing your expertise with us today. We're at the Soma Street Food Park in San Francisco. Soma refers to the neighborhood we're in.
It stands for South of Market Street. It's a hub for startups, small businesses, and freelancers of all kinds. It's a bit like Williamsburg in Brooklyn, Northwest 23rd in Portland, and the Ravenswood Corridor in Chicago. Like those neighborhoods, SOMA caters to the self-employed. Because let's face it, if you're just starting out, signing a lease for your own office is a big risk. Here in SOMA, there are more than 12 co-working spaces where you can rent a desk or a meeting room by the hour, not by the month. Of course, launching a successful business requires more than an office you can afford. You need training, funding, and ongoing support. Women's Initiative has been providing these essentials to low-income women for more than 25 years. Chew on this correspondent, Charlie Mintz, had a chance to attend one of their open houses.
Like, oh, I'm going to do $1 million my first year.
Yeah, right.
Susan Grant and Patty Tang are in business. In the corner of a small conference room in an Oakland office, they've set up folding tables displaying their wares. Grant designs and sells sterling silver jewelry.
Everything I do is very geometric and very contemporary.
Baja Nights jewelry.
Tang sells cases, iPhone, iPad, Kindle, business card, all made from scrap leather recycled off the floor of an Italian factory.
And the name of my company is Chic Modern, and it is recycled leather business accessories. It's all recycled, made in Italy. And what they do is they use all the scraps from the leather factory, so it's eco-chic, eco-friendly.
The cases are really nice. It seems like people should want to buy them. But Tank's been in business for 6 years now, and running that business still isn't easy.
Still a little bit up and down. I still need to do more marketing. It's marketing you have to constantly do all the time.
Tang and Grant, and the other women here, they're graduates of the Women's Initiative for Self-Employment. It's an 11-week program that helps low-income women develop the skills to run their own businesses. Everyone in the room is in some stage of getting a business off the ground. Or, if it's off the ground, trying to keep in the air. The program's most successful graduate is Allison Barakat, better known as Betty, as in Bake Sale Betty, that restaurant in Oakland where the line for fried chicken sandwiches stretches around the block.
She is so famous that her shop, her store front, doesn't have a sign outside.
Thais Resende is the executive director of the program's East Bay Hub. She says Barakat is a little unusual. She employs about 80 people, and she works out of a physical storefront. Most graduates of the program just sell online. But, she says, any of these women here could be the next Bake Sale Betty.
Our class is really intense, but it is really, really effective as well.
Later tonight, when the open house gets going, the women will get a chance to meet some customers in person. But no one's around to buy anything yet. And this gives Patty Tang a chance to recount the story of how she got here.
2006, I believe. I got laid off from my job, and then so I came to Women's Initiative to kind of rebuild myself and restructure what I was planning on doing originally.
Tang says her business is growing, but she still can't support herself on cases alone, so she does some salaried work on the side. Her friend Susan Grant's in the same boat, though now she pays salaries too, to a silversmith and a few part-time employees in Mexico. Grant graduated from the program in 2006, and she says she actually did support herself for a few years. But the recession meant that she had to pick up another job.
You know, you just do what you can do to stay afloat.
To be eligible for the program, a woman's income can't exceed $40,000 a year. It's a little more if she's supporting others. Once she completes the class, she can get access to an ongoing mentorship from Bay Area business people.
How to write a business plan, how to follow up with marketing and get a business license and seller's permit. You just learn a lot. I mean, it's like going through an MBA program, like a mini MBA program.
A business education in 11 weeks. As Susan Grant remembers it, that means a lot of homework.
Oh my God, you name it. The first couple of classes you go, when you go through simple steps, the first training, you're like, oh, this is so fro-fro. Seriously, I'm building a collage. And you're thinking that, yeah, and you're thinking going, seriously, come on, I want business stuff. And then you get slammed.
Lots of research, lots of projects, forecasting, analysis, branding, budgets, packaging, marketing, all of it culminating in a business plan. But program director Thais Resende says all that work pays off. The program's trained thousands of women, 3 out of 4 of them start businesses and are still in business after 5 years.
We also know that they hire in average 2 employees per business that they open, that they pay more than double the minimum wage. And what is more amazing is that they're hiring people that lives in the same neighborhoods that they do.
Building local communities that are self-employed or locally hired is part of Women's Initiative's mission, and they've done it. Another number worth sharing is 5,000. Resende says that's how many jobs women trained in the classes have created. But success is a struggle, especially when you're your own boss. Just ask Sharon Pluchet.
Oh my gosh, I'm in love right now.
She makes butter cookies. Her business is called A Better Cookie.
Why butter cookies? Why not chocolate chip? My favorite.
Well, because everybody has chocolate chips. I figured I'd come at a different angle with a butter cookie, and it's gourmet, it's a specialty. So, you know, some people like something different. So.
That is to say, she thought she'd find a niche market. This was a strategy she learned in class. And she also just really loves making butter cookies. But love doesn't translate easily into profits. Pluchet finished the program last year, and she's still working out the kinks in her business.
I don't have a website, so people usually contact me through email. Friends, family, and people that I've worked with, coworkers, doing events like this.
You need a website.
I know. I'm trying to build it myself.
That's because she can't hire a web developer. And there are other challenges, like managing the cost of a commercial kitchen. That's made business tough, but she's excited about a new California law that'll let her sell cookies she bakes in her own kitchen at home. Pluchet says starting a business has always been her dream. She's working on transitioning out of her other jobs so she can sell cookies full time. It's scary, she says, but it's also liberating.
My thing is, for anybody wanting to do this, just do it. You know, just do it.
Pluchet hopes one day she can become the next Famous Amos, or at least get bought out by someone. With a recipe and a plan, anything can happen. In San Francisco, I'm Charlie Mintz for Chew on This.
You're listening to Chew on This. I'm Lisa Rothman. We've been talking about how to be a freelancer or small business owner like the women we just heard about. Now it's time for the Meal of Fortune Challenge.
An important step in launching any business is coming up with the right name. We are here at the Soma Street Food Park. 10 food trucks, 10 food truck names. There are lots of creative food truck names out there. Some are descriptive.
Bacon, bacon.
Intriguing.
Fins on the hoof.
Clever.
Nick's really good breakfast.
Provocative.
Naked chorizo.
Rhyming.
Mama's empanadas.
Alliterative.
Bow and bowl.
Onomatopoeic.
Nom nom.
Authoritative.
The chairman.
And multicultural.
Kung fu tacos.
Here's today's challenge. Think of your favorite food. If you were going to start a food truck, what would you name it?
Time's up. The people here at San Francisco's Soma Street Food Park have turned in their ideas for the name of a food truck that serves their favorite food. At this very moment, our two freelancing experts, Holly Minch and Adele Berry, are adjudicating the winners. You're probably wondering, what'll they win? What's today's Meal of Fortune? Tofu makgani sandwiches and pork shoulder sandwiches from the Fuki food truck. The tofu makgani sandwich contains garam masala, tomato cream sauce, carrots, harissa, which is a hot sauce used in North African cuisine, and ginger sesame mayonnaise. The pork shoulder sandwich speaks for itself.
And the winners are... Dirty Little Secret Garden, a food truck serving salads and fresh, healthy foods.
And who came up with that?
Isla Mancad.
And Ole Mole, offering chocolate by Gloria Morales.
They won the Meal of Fortune with creativity, but you can also win with luck. People here at the Soma Street Food Park have placed their names in the official Chew on This picnic basket, and four have been picked at random. The lucky winners are
Carolyn Wong,
Carrington Arredondo,
Ela Mancat,
Rana Pell.
Our production engineer is Jim Bennett. Matt Martin, the general manager of KALW, is our advising producer. Ashley Ann Krigbaum is our outreach coordinator and production associate. Maggie Ballard is our creative consultant. The sound editor is Eric Wayne. Marilyn Pittman is our on-site director. Justine Choi, Melissa Fries, Luis Granados, Julieta Kusnir, and Connie Chan Wang are the show's idea advisors. Special thanks to our audience here at the Soma Street Food Park for asking such great questions. So I want to know, how does it taste?
I just like the freshness,
and I just love the texture, the flavor. It's fresh and spicy.
Go to chewonthisradio.com for information about upcoming episodes, more freelancing suggestions, and a place to share your own business successes and challenges. I'm Lisa Rothman. We've heard a lot of great ideas today. Until next time, try one out and let us know how it goes. Next time on Chew On This, helping kids stay safe and have fun when they're online. Tune in for answers to questions like,
if you look at Facebook, if it was actually a country, it would be the third largest country in the world.
And I have a question about limiting the amount of marketing that happens to kids when they're online.
That's next time when we Chew On This.